My name is Rusty Mackey, and you're listening to The Art of Stability. Hello, friends. It's the last episode of Season 2. Can you believe it? I can't. And this final episode is a gem. You're going to hear from Sid and Jeff, who are putting a lot of goodness into the world through their writing, pastoring, podcasting, facilitating cohorts, and starting a brand new doctoral ministry program in spiritual formation and neuroscience. When you hear all of that, you might think that they are not relatable people, but today's episode will change your mind. If you or someone you know is in a lean season, a suffering season, a season where you're wondering what's going to happen, Jeff and Sid remind us that when Jesus gives us what we need, that is enough. So stay with us until the end and enjoy Daily Bread with Jeff and Sid Holzclaw. Sid, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today for this episode. As I start out each of my episodes, I always begin with something that I appreciate about my guest. And the two of you, I've gotten to know you through your website, your offerings online. I also did a cohort with the two of you, which I've recommended to like 18 people thus far. And one of the things that I've noticed from afar and up close with the two of you that I appreciate, it really boils down to the word generosity. My first word that I thought of was collaboration. I love to see how the two of you collaborate. You're married, you work together, you have worked together for a long time. And I was like, yeah, collaboration. But then as I thought about it more, I realized it's not just that you work well together, it's that you bring a lot. You bring so many resources of your experience and your knowledge. And the cohort that we did, and even your offerings online, you just give and give and give. And it's like, man, you really put out a lot of yourself into the world. And I value that because we can tend to have a scarcity mindset in this scary culture of ours. So as we start out today, I would love to hear your story of generosity. Is that generosity of your resources intentional? Did it just happen? Yeah, what's the story behind your generosity?
Oh gosh, thank you. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's really nice to hear that. Yeah, I think that, so when we were dating, there was, we both, like, it was really meaningful to both of us to the verse, you know, the too much, to whom much has been given, much will be required or much will be expected. And I think that was a conversation we had early on when we were even dating about, like, we felt like God had given us so much. And then, I don't know, I guess that's just sort of been underneath, but it's nice to hear the generosity. Sometimes I do feel like I live in a little bit of a scarcity mentality, Rusty. So it's nice to hear that it appears generous because it is a constant struggle, you know, of like, especially in the last year or so when things have changed financially. So it is, but we do still want to resource people. And yeah, we both really love God's church and really love the people of God's church. And so want to do whatever we can while we're here to resource God's people.
So Sid and I are like all over the place emotionally, I guess, in some sense. But and maybe emotionally is not the right word. It's more like we're both like, we can be very earnest people, but then we can also be like pretty silly. And maybe that's why we're good collaborators. I don't know. But as far as like the generosity, I think what Sid said, that like we just, you know, we've really been ministered by the church and love the church and love God's people, love God. And so I think when it comes, like, God has always taken care of us, like on all sorts of levels. And so it's just kind of like, we just want to give. So I don't know. Kind of caught us off guard with that one.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting you to say generosity.
Usually I'm on the other end of the questions where I really get somebody to like catch them off guard with our podcast. Now I'm like, you really got us.
Exactly. That was my goal. Just kidding. You know, what I hear in what you're sharing is that you can tend to have a scarcity mindset, but you've experienced God as being a God of abundance. And I think there's a beautiful relation in the way that we see God, that when we experience him as a God of abundance, the natural outflow is that we not only have an abundance mindset in relation to him, but then hopefully it bleeds into an abundance mindset with others. And that's what I hear you two saying. Would you mind sharing with me how cool that all the way back in your dating, that verse meant so much to you? What were some of the factors around that time? You mentioned that God had just given you so much, had blessed you so much. What were some of the factors that made that verse stand out in that moment of dating?
That's another really good question. For me, I think it was, you know, because we were coming to each other individually at that point, right? Our lives were not yet joined together. I think for me, I was teaching in the Redwood Forest, like a couple minutes from the ocean, you know? So it's like I was living in a three-season cabin in the middle of the Redwood Forest, and I was spending my days outside enjoying God's incredible creation. I was actually at that point in time working with senior citizens doing an elder hostel program. So I was, you know, doing ocean birding trips and redwood ecology, because my original degree is in environmental education. So I was doing all this sort of outdoor experiencing kind of stuff with all these retired people. And I was spending my days, you know, in a 15 passenger van, driving people around, just asking them questions about, you know, as you're in this season of your life and you're talking to some, because I was in my early 20s,
yeah,
you know, what would you say to me about life? And what do you wish you knew when you were my age? And, wow, you know, what advice would you give me? And I was just kind of like a sponge soaking in all this wisdom from all these people while also in the middle of this beautiful place. Just enjoying God's creation. It just felt like my life was just so rich at that point in time. And then, I don't know, I think meeting Jeff felt like a real abundance too, because he was so different from anyone else I had ever known. And that just felt like God's kindness and God's favor were in our meeting and in our relationship. And so it just felt like, I mean, a period of instability came soon after that, but we won't talk about that right now. But it was just this beautiful season of abundance and richness. And it just felt like I have everything right now.
Mm. So you were an old soul all the way back at 20. A deep person asking seniors, what do I need to know about life?
Yeah. Well, I figured I had already wasted some time and done some things that weren't worthwhile. So I might as well find out what was worthwhile.
Yeah.
So.
Love that. Jeff, how would you answer that question?
Well, before I answer the question, I always joke that I rescued Sid from a life of outdoor adventure and brought her to the Midwest. That's what happened when we got married. She figured that if she married a Californian, she could just stay there forever. But now we're back to her hometown in Grand Rapids, which is great. It's no Redwood Forest.
No, not quite.
I think my family life, as my twin brother and I, we're the youngest, as we perceived it, was very stable. As I got older, I figured out that was mostly just like my siblings and my mom, like just creating some sort of pseudo healthy environment. But I grew up kind of with a sense of like, oh, like, you know, people love me. And like, I have all my, you know, we're suburban America, San Jose, California, Silicon Valley technology stuff. And then in high school, I had a pretty bad back injury, which totally changed my life. And it was it wasn't inoperable, but the doctor was like, this isn't bad enough to risk operating, to have the risk of something bad happening. But it was bad enough that I was in constant pain for about 4 or 5 years. And so that really changed my life. And I think, and just learning different kind of like the limits of my body and how to regulate my emotions when I'm in a lot of pain, but like nothing really can be done about it. Getting on, you know, pain schedules and schedules of like pain maintenance. And like that really kind of, I think, changed my life and changed my spiritual life, yeah, in good ways that I did, you know, I've kind of been unpacking ever since. And then I had like a pretty strong calling into ministry pretty early. And so I felt, I guess I felt like a responsibility, like, what am I going to do with that? And that's part of where our dating and then marriage, you know, our relationship and our collaborations come in. Like early on in our dating relationship, I was like, you know, I'm going to be a pastor. So can you handle that? It was basically like one of our dating conversations. So we started in earnest. Our pastor who married us said, you got your first 2 years of marriage out while dating, you know? So we're very earnest. We like to have fun, but then we would be like deep dive into like each other's calling, vocations, values, and whether they were aligned or not, you know?
Well, and it also, I mean, it's the timing of coming together felt so generous on God's part too, because we often joke that if we had met each other 6 months earlier, we would have hated each other.
It's true.
Yeah. I was coming out of a season of, I mean, I, you know, had grown, yeah, I had a strong relationship with God at different points in my life, but certainly not 6 months before I met Jeff. It was sort of more of a period of rebellion and like anger and I all was sorts of fits and rages. And I was not the kind of person Jeff would have been drawn to at all.
And I was like a self-righteous Pharisee, like do-gooder Christian who looked down their nose at like all these other people. And I hadn't quite experienced God's radical grace in my own life. And so if we had met, we would have been like, we would have just pointed at you, you're a bad person.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> But 6 months later, you said, you're my person.
Yeah.
Well, we had both had major, I think, experiences of God's grace in the meantime. And so that's where the,
Brought together by grace, held together by grace. So both of you in your reflections mentioned this idea of moments of instability. And I asked you before you came on to think of a moment of instability that you experienced together. Would you be willing to share a story with us of how you navigated that season of life?
Yeah, it was not too long ago. It was maybe 2 years ago now.
Year and a half. Three intertwined moments.
Yeah, it was the trifecta of instability. So
kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it was, so it was like in the winter time, like January, February, and we thought we were in the middle of a really good deal on like, we won't go into details, but we ended up figuring out that we were actually being frauded. So we were losing major amounts of money. And then on top of that,
it was a very sophisticated, but
yeah, it was a very sophisticated fraud. It was so hard to detect, but anyway, we were in the middle of that, which is tough anyway.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, Jeff's mom was coming to the end of her life. She was living here in Grand Rapids in an assisted living facility, and she had been suffering from cancer. And so she was coming to the end of her days. And then in the middle of that also, I had been sort of randomly out of the blue offered a job at a university. And so I was in the middle of an interviewing process for that, which was sort of upheaving everything.
Candidating with like, you know, 100 other people and then, you know, 10 other people. And then she got to like her and one other person. This is over about 4 months. So like all at the same time, like my mom's declining in health. We're trying to figure out like, are we being frauded or is this a real thing? And then my mom passes away. And then and Sid's still in the process of like, and we're just, you know, if she's going to take a job that's like uprooting our family, that'd be me leaving ministry, basically leaving, you know, church life and moving to, you know, some other place in the Midwest. And very flat. And
let the hearer understand.
Yes.
You know, it would have been a sacrifice for an environmental educator to live in this place.
Yes. And, you know, and this is touching on Sid's, you know, for her, like thinking of this job change, this is touching on like both of our vocational calling, like personal vocational calling. So those are deep things. Then if you've been in academic environments, there's lots of, not just academic, you know, but especially in academic. For all of you who don't know, some of the most insecure people you know are the professors at academics that you admire the most. So there's a lot of, you know, fraud and insecurity that was, you know, creeping up with Sid and then me thinking like stepping away from pastoral ministry that I've been doing for 20 years. You're right. So there was like, this is like layers upon layers of like, and then we're just like, oh, we've just lost a lot of money.
And caring for his mom was a lot too, because yeah, we're the only family in town, and it was a lot of, you know, we were with her a lot. And it was just really hard watching her slip away too. So it was like all of that, the grief and the loss and the possibility of upheaving our life and moving somewhere else, and the anger at being, you know, frauded. It was like just this swirl of uncertainty and intense emotion.
It sounds like a lot. I'm just thinking in my mind, you've got, you know, a financial strain, you've got emotional strain, you've got the spiritual strain of vocation, you've got the emotional, physical, and spiritual strain of anger over betrayal and fraud. There is a lot there. And I'm also thinking, you mentioned grief and loss, Sid, and one thing that grief does is it slows us down. At least that's what it's meant to do. And yet you're in this job application process, yeah, which requires you to step up and step out and put forward energy, right? For you as well, Jeff, as Sid's spouse. What was that like for you two, as your grief is saying slow down and mourn, yet life, you're having to figure out, are we being frauded? Can I pursue this job? You're having to put energy out when all you probably wanted to do was go lay in the bed and cry. What was that like?
Well, actually, it was familiar for me, I think for both of us, which is, you know, interesting, because when we got married, my mom had died suddenly in December, and we got married in April. And so it was, it felt in some ways familiar, in the sense of like grieving this incredible loss while also anticipating this new chapter of life at the same time, and always having that sort of fluctuation between, yeah, I want to lay around and do nothing and weep. Mm-hmm. And I'm also, you know, looking forward to this new thing that's happening. And so it was, aside from the familiarity, I think it was just, I think upheaval is a really good word for it. Instability, right? It was just so, it was sort of playing and tugging on all of my, sense of security and all of my false securities, right? All the things that, when they're going well, give us an illusion of security. So there was, you know, the predictability or the rhythms or the patterns that are normal, and then the finances, and then, you know, just that you have this sense that every day is going to be sort of, you're continuing in this vocation. And then when all of that got disrupted at once, it was just sort of revealing to me, here's where you've actually put your security. Like, you like to think that you've put your security in God, but actually here's where it is. And when those foundations, you know, when that bedrock was shaken, it's like, oh, my security is in the wrong place again. Like, and I wouldn't have noticed it if everything hadn't sort of been, you know, unsettled and shifted like that again. So, it's always good noticing when you've become attached to something you didn't realize you were attached to again.
I'm curious, for the two of you, it was so familiar feeling to be in that space, but you obviously were different people because you've grown. What did it look like to support one another in that time?
I think we were kind of all over the place. It was interesting because it wasn't, because it was like these three things, and they weren't all negative. Like, in one sense, like Sid being affirmed in her personal life to be considered for this, you know, job was very affirming, as well as destabilizing. Yeah. And then, so I was able, I definitely, as a, you know, proud husband's like, yeah, you know, you should totally go for this, and you're not underqualified or you're not whatever. So I'm like really pumping her up and encouraging her. And I'm also kind of, as someone who's been in academia, I was able to lend her my experience and encouragement and all of that in positive ways. And then Sid, you know, because she had grieved her mother's death 20 years earlier, you know, she was both able to help me do that. But then it was just, she was able just to be with me kind of, you know, in those times. And actually, and moving back to Grand Rapids, Sid, if you want to say more, actually kind of was a re-grieving time for you, Sid, because you hadn't lived in your hometown since your mom had passed. And so then just driving around town, you're like, oh, I used to go there with my mom. Like, and in 20 years, you hadn't really had that memory, you know, because whenever we were in town, you were like with family and we had kids and it was vacation. And now we just live there. And so you have that, you know, and then the same with me. So I was had, you know, since I was my mom's caretaker for several years, it's kind of like, oh, I, like it's Sunday afternoon and I'm not visiting my mom, or I was like, I used to go there to get my mom's stuff. And that's, so then you kind of, you know, so we were just able to be like, oh yeah, I felt that. Now you're feeling that. So I can be there, you know, with you. So she was really helpful for me in the midst of that.
As far as the, and then, you know, the fraud stuff, I think our bodies were experiencing that more than anything else. It was just sort of this, you know, constant state of high alert and like being on our guard. And so, I mean, we did things like just, you know, held hands as we were like falling asleep at night, or just, you know, trying to, we would be awake in the middle of the night together, you know, wondering if we were being frauded or not. We did a lot more long walks together. Mm-hmm. Just tried to sort of care for ourselves physically and press into, you know, the reality. I think the biggest shift for me is that when I lost my mom in my early 20s, I had a season of like being angry with God about that. This time there was no question of God's goodness. It was just an understanding of the brokenness of humanity instead of, you know, and the brokenness of the world. And so I don't think, you know, the difference for me was that my faith didn't waver at all in this mm-hmm. last season. It was more like, well, this is part of what the life of following Jesus looks like, in that, mm-hmm. you know, we don't always get to be comfortable. In fact, we're not really reading the Bible if we think that a life of following Jesus is comfortable. But then also just like assuming and trusting God's provision in the middle of it, and recognizing that it was me that had slipped in my attachment to what where security lay, rather than God doing something different than he had always done. And so returning to God abundantly provides, and I have everything I need, even though we're losing all this money and even though everything is sort of in flux, it doesn't change that God is a God of provision and abundance and mercy.
There's so much beauty in what you both shared, the beauty of empathy, just being present with one another, tending to your bodies. Oh, I'm hypervigilant. Like, let's just hold hands and calm down. Let's go on a walk. There's the reality in that too. I mean, I'm just hearing like, it doesn't sound like it was easy, or like you know, ran across the marathon finish line with your heads held high. You know, it just sounds like you just survived it.
Yeah,
you basically just survived it. And you tried to be attentive to yourself and one another, and then the Lord as well, in the process. And I can imagine that there's still remnants of pain from that season. It was just 2 years ago, but I'm grateful to hear and for you to share how the two of you pressed into that, pressed through that. It's a great encouragement. So thank you for sharing.
Well, I think too, there was like that the calm after the storm, where there's kind of like, nothing's really changed. And then life just kind of goes on. It's kind of like, well, you know, my mom has passed. I loved her. You know, she loved Jesus, you know, and you know, this is the way of things. Sid didn't get the job. We didn't move, you know? So it's just like, so now we just continue in the life we had. And, you know, and then, you know, about the money, it's like, well, we've always had a house. We've never not been able to eat, you know, like that was really kind of you know, just money we were saving, you know, and now it's gone. And so, you know, we kind of just like, oh yeah, like God is, you know, like we still have our daily bread from Jesus, and that is really all we're ever promised anyways. And so, you know, we'll just be faithful to the things before us. And so I guess it's, yes. I don't know. Does that make sense, Sid? Is that kind of how you experience that too?
Yeah. Yeah. It was the, I recently have been reading Interior Freedom by Jacques Philippe. It's a little tiny book, but the quote, one of the quotes that really stands out to me is he says, the only true security in life lies in the certainty that God is faithful and can never abandon us because his fatherly tenderness is irrevocable. And so that sense of like, God is still with us. He has not abandoned us, and he is still fathering us. He's still tender toward us. That never changes. You know, and I think also rehearsing all the stories of his provision in the past, like Jeff and I have, over the years tried to be intentional about remembering how God has provided for us, especially in seasons of doubt or in seasons of, how is this going to work financially? How is this going to make sense? You know, and remembering things like, I mean, there, we've got some great stories that we could tell about how God provided at just the right time with just what we needed. So it's always good to do those, sharing the memories and reminding each other and reminding ourselves.
It is good indeed. And I love how God does reaffirm to us again and again and again through seasons of difficulty. It's like you said, Sid, it's not if instability will come, it's when it comes.
Yes.
What's our anchor? What's our foundation? It's good. So with that in mind, the goodness of God, how faithful God is, I'd love to hear from both of you in this moment of your life, what are some practices that are helping you to really enjoy Jesus right now?
I think, you know, one thing that I would love to be even more intentional about. So, you know, I would love to say I'm doing this every day, all throughout the day, but I'm not. Let's just be honest. but I really am trying to be intentional about savoring the good moments. You know, and we talked about this in the cohort you were in, but just, you know, like I've got all these beautiful flowers in bloom in July here. I've got, you know, daisies and echinacea and, all kinds of beautiful things. And so just looking out my window or actually standing out there or sitting on the front porch and just really soaking in the colors and, you know, all the beauty and even just, like I have some, I like to knit. I'm knitting a blanket right now and just, you know, just the feeling of the yarn and just trying to really pay attention to my senses. And, this is our last summer with both of our sons at home. Our younger one is going off to college this fall and our older one is getting married next spring. And so when we have family time together, just really soaking it in, and just really savoring the time and just receiving it all as like, this is God's blessing that, you know, he enjoys me enjoying this way more than I'm enjoying it. And so just receiving and just trying to really soak it in and, you know, sort of savoring the goodness of God in those ways.
Mm-hmm. Sid, as you think of God enjoying you, enjoying the gifts that he's giving, even more than you're enjoying them, you mentioned part of the way you do that is through your five senses. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, and you began to touch on this, but what's your sense of the Lord in that?
Yeah, like in my five senses as I'm sensing those things?
Yeah, or even beyond your five senses, you know, is there like a spiritual sense of the Lord with you in those moments?
Yeah, well, so it's funny. I think Jeff and I've talked about this, that joy is like a full-bodied emotion. Like it doesn't just, you know, with some other emotions, I can be like, oh, I feel that in my chest or I feel that in my jaw or, you know, like that sort of takes up residence in my body. But joy is kind of like my entire body. and so just a pervasive sense of peace and calm and the joy is just sort of like this. So I also, I'm an Ignatian retreat director and I love the spiritual exercises of Ignatius. And I just remember one time when I was sort of like imagining, when I was going through the exercises myself, imagining Jesus resurrected, like right after his resurrection. And I was sort of had this imaginative experience of Jesus going and like greeting all of his creation before he greeted a person, you know, sort of like even before he met Mary, even before that, of like him just coming out of the tomb and being like greeting the birds and the trees and the grasses and the flowers, and just sort of this sense of like, you know, like it's all stuff he made, stuff he loves, and just his enjoyment of being able to enjoy it again. And so I think that's sort of what I'm tapping into in those moments of savoring, of like, Jesus enjoys his creation far more than I ever will. And I am also a created one. And the mm-hmm. fact that he enjoys me enjoying what he made. Yeah, I could just really geek out on all of that. But just that sense of like, I feel a companionship with God when I delight in the way, in the goodness of the world. Because there's so much we can focus on that's not right in the world. But when we focus on the beauty and the order and the goodness, I just feel a companionship with Jesus in that delight in what he has made.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It's a lovely idea. Jeff, how about for you?
I would say my enjoyment of Jesus has been a lot around like enjoying the faith of the next generation, like especially in our two boys. We have a 20-year-old and a 18-year-old, and just seeing that, you know, just their faith. And then it's been contagious to some of the younger youth in our church. And we baptized a bunch of youth that we've been walking with for many years. And so it's just been, you know, just seeing kind of faith kind of ignite and grow, you know, in people has been a lot of fun of recent. I would say personally, you know, there's, I went through the Ignatian exercises, like an 8 or 9 month journey. And that was kind of happening during some other life changes after all the events we were just talking about. But and so that was much more wrestling rather than enjoyment. I really enjoyed walking with Jesus, like in his ministry, but I found myself really resisting the deep meditations of Jesus's like suffering and death. And so that was interesting for me. Interesting, like, is understatement. But I was like, oh, like, you know, on the one hand, I wouldn't think of myself as someone who avoids the pain of other people. But I was also like, I'm avoiding walking with Jesus in his pain as he delivers us from sin and evil. So I've been wrestling with that. And of recent, I've really been enjoying reading the Psalms. And so that's kind of been my morning practice, is just reading several Psalms. I'm trying to like soak in the Psalms a lot more. So that's been, and kind of asking those like attachment and neuroscience-y questions, and then just being odd at how, like, you know, these ancient writers like often knew just as much as all of us in our brain scanny, you know, technological world knew about human life and suffering and God's presence. And so that's been a lot of fun.
It strikes me how all three of those examples you gave have a relational component to them. The example of really enjoying watching the faith of the next generation, that's an interesting spin. You know, often we think of looking at the cloud of witnesses that's gone before us, but you're looking at those who are going behind us, and like, oh, that's stirring something in me. And then even in the wrestling with Jesus, enjoying walking with him through his ministry, wrestling with his suffering, there's a relational component there. And then with the Psalms, it's not just reading the Psalms, but it's looking at those neuroscience, the attachment questions, you know, which is ultimately about relationship. As you are really enjoying all three of those, Jeff, I'll ask you the same question that I asked Sid. What's your relational sense of the Lord in that?
Well, I kind of wrestle with that, like, because I feel guilty that I feel most connected with the Lord in like a cognitive studying capacity. And then I try to tell myself, no, that's the way Jesus made me. And that's also how Jesus meets me. But then I'm also like, no, I need to be like, you know, we've entered more of a charismatic kind of life and church environment. So then they have that like, well, you need to be hearing from the Lord or feeling something from the Spirit. And I'm like, well, I hear things from the Lord most when I'm like studying something, not when I'm just doing all these spirit, you know. Sid and I are now, you know, we're organizing a doctoral ministry in spiritual formation and relational neuroscience. And part of me is like, I really don't like all the spiritual formation stuff. All the silence and solitude and, you know, which means I just need more of it.
Which is why we're doing it together.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I'm, you know, so that's where it's like, and that's where I think that's good, right? That Jesus meets us where we're, where we are and then leads us further. And so that, like, even that wrestling of like, where is Jesus leading me in the midst of reading the Psalms or like walking, you know, and I'm not sure I like where he's leading me in this devotional time. Can I just go back to my study Bible and a concordance, you know, and cross-reference all this, you know, and get my, you know, Bible study on, you know, so that's, you know, and that's also all the way back to like the collaboration kind of question. I think that's where Sid and I have found that great balance is we can encourage as well as exhort each other in those, the relational, emotional sides. It's a lot more competent. You know, I have, you know, a doctorate. I have the competencies in the intellectual world, you know, in the study side. We both love studying, of course, but in slightly different realms. And so we're able to really kind of build, you know, thankfully we don't tear each other down. We just kind of end up creating positive momentum through those two things. So,
yeah. And that's very clear in your work with one another. And I was interested to see how you would answer that question, knowing that you're a bit more in the cognitive realm. But what I appreciate about your answer that I think helps others who are listening, who might be a little more cognitive than intuitive, is that dynamic of your sense of Jesus is not necessarily like this, oh, like I just feel he's right here with me. But at least in the example you gave, it's this sense of wrestling and resistance. And I think so often we can resist resistance when God is actually inviting us. Okay, I'm not, my sense right now is I'm wrestling. Well, how can I stay present to that? And you even mentioned in that, I don't really like where the Lord's leading me in this. That's the resistance. And yet the Lord is leading you. And he's near. And so I think that's just a beautiful encouragement to folks that as we're seeking to grow deeper in our relationship with the Lord, sometimes that doesn't feel good, but we still need to press into it. So well done, Jeff.
Well, and it's really, you know, Sid calls herself an integrative coach, and that's like kind of the goal. I do feel like in our spiritual formation or personal life, like we do, churches kind of go back and forth. Like, so you have the real strong cognitive doctrinal traditions of kind of church and discipleship is knowing things and reading your Bible and getting the right information. And, you know, and then, you know, and I love that. So I'm really good at that, you know, but then, you know, early in my life, I was like, you know, there's a lot of these social, emotional capacities and competencies that I really need more of. And that Sid naturally brought into our marriage. And I was like, I really need to grow in these things. And there was a part of me that I think this happens, you know, to say, oh, all that cognitive stuff is like, that's actually bad. That was like holding me back, or that's not where it's at. You know, we need the heart knowledge, and the head knowledge is, you know, we look down on the people who, you know, who only have that, you know. But then you have people can go the other direction. Like I was just this touchy-feely, you know, Christian, I was chasing experiences and I needed to bolster like the truth, you know, and then you have people who swing the other direction. And I remember actually speaking relationally, but Sid like helped facilitate a prayer time with me, you know, an imaginative prayer, you know, conversation with Jesus. She was just kind of facilitating. Cause for me, I also have ADHD and I get very distracted in my prayer time. And that's why the spiritual formation stuff's really hard for me, is like my brain is going all over the place. But having Sid kind of facilitate it actually helps me stay focused. And so, you know, we're going through this prayer time and I got this like word from Jesus about all the intellectual stuff, which was just, it was really simple. And I wrote it down. And I had it like pasted above my desk for a while. And it was just like Jesus saying to me, I'm interested in the things you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like just an affirmation of like, oh, like when I'm just like reading really brainy books on things, and part of me has no idea how this relates to theology or church life, like that's still part of the world that the Word, you know, made. And he's just as interested, kind of like what Sid was saying about nature. You know, he's, you know, saying hello to the grass and the trees. And it's like, he's also saying hello to quantum physics and, you know, and electromagnetism and, you know, all of our neurons and the synapses and how we made all this. Like, you know, Jesus is really interested in that. So if I'm interested in that, then that is also a place. So for all of you intellectual nerds, like don't be too hard on all your intellectual curiosities. Our son, our youngest son, he will randomly come into the, you know, kitchen. That's kind of our general family space. And what do we call it, Sid? It's like the random internet moment. Like he'll just come up with all these random facts, like the, what's that space telescope that they just put out? The Hibbs spell.
The James Webb.
Yeah, the web, you know, and he's just like, oh, you wouldn't believe what they just found. And I was just like, that is so interesting. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, what an encouragement to all of us that Jesus is interested in what we're interested in because he created it, whatever it is. And thank you both for your answers. It showcases who you are and it showcases how you work well together. And going back to the beginning, thank you for your generosity, for sharing the resources, your interest that you have with the rest of the world. It's been wonderful spending time with you, and thank you for your ministry.
Yeah, thank you, Rusty.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, friends, thank you for listening all the way to the very end. I hope this season of the podcast has helped you take some steps to feel more connected to Jesus, no matter what is going on in your life. Listen, if you want to get connected to Sid and Jeff Holzclaw, they are the co-founders of Embodied Faith. I'll put a link in the show notes to their website. I'll also add some links in there to the cohort that they regularly host called Attaching to God. That's the one that I was a part of. It was excellent. I recommend it to everyone. I'll put a link in there as well to their D-Men program that's forthcoming on spiritual formation and relational neuroscience, as well as their podcast, Embodied Faith, since you no longer are going to be able to listen to mine for a couple of months. In that vein, I'm going to take a break from the podcast for a bit, but as it stands, my plan for season 3 is to talk about my forthcoming book, also titled The Art of Stability, as the launch day draws closer. I'm thinking I'll walk through some of the key concepts of each chapter to help you out, as well as give you a hefty appetizer so that hopefully you'll pick up the book. As always, shares and subscribes help a ton with the podcast. If you've enjoyed this season, would you consider sharing it with someone or subscribing if you're not already? Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next season on The Art of Stability.